The Doug and Wolf Show.
The next 4 hours of your life will be outstanding wherever you are if you keep listening to The Doug and Wolf Show.
You're calling your shot.
I'm
right
calling
now.
My shot on today's show.
Doug Franz, Ron Wolfley.
You know that's good radio.
Oh, yeah.
Doug and Wolf, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Okay, some backup quarterbacks are there for just to be the moral support, just to be the guy behind the guy to help him with the offense, be a veteran in the room. But can he play?
Yeah.
Can he play?
It's always a problem right there, and always a question, is it not?
I realize you hate it when we just start guns a-blazing. I should say we, because I just railroaded the show right from the beginning. But the talk of New York Jets fans is already driving me crazy.
You.
With all due respect to Trevor Siemian's family, and he deserves a lot of it, he's not very good.
Yo.
So quit whining, oh no, we're on our third string quarter. Did you see what the second string quarterback was doing? It wasn't very good.
No, it wasn't good, but still, I think there's a lot of the injury issue that goes along with that right now. It's one of the reasons why I would say hibachi to you. Actually, come on. The guy went down, and he's messed up.
He wasn't good he wasn't good when he was with the Broncos.
Yeah, is
not trying to
saying
rip him.
That, though? Is somebody actually complaining? Are you serious? Somebody's out there saying, oh, the Jets, we would have been good. We'd have beaten the Browns if it...
Every Jets article is what a crying shame and how terrible it is that they're already down to Luke Falk. And
wow.
The truth is, it's terrible that you lost your starter, a guy in his second year with mono. You want Darnold to get every rep possible. That stinks. I get it. But the crying that you're on your third... Luke Falk is going to be better than Trevor Siemian.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's going to be an NFL, one of the best 32 quarterbacks in the world.
Right.
But he's going to be better than Trevor Siemian. There, good. I feel better now.
Got it out of the way right there. The whole, man, that was kind of gruesome, though. Was it not the Trevor Siemian injury right there? Did you see that? Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That was a little nasty right there. You know what? One of the worst things I've ever seen, ladies and gentlemen, on the football field, and I've told this story many, many times, it's Rob Monaco, as a matter of fact, the monster, ladies and gentlemen. Rob Monaco. This was a center out of Vanderbilt. This guy was super strong, too. He was a power lifter. That's what he did, right? And he looked like a power lifter. Just imagine, remember the old Olympics when you'd see it back? Go back and look at some of the grainy film, the Olympics, right? Back in the 20th century, right? Go back and look at it, ladies and gentlemen, and you will see that it's just there was a man, and I forget his name, but he was a Russian, and he dominated. He dominated powerlifting, right? That's exactly what Rob Monaco looked like. The Russian that dominated powerlifting back in the late 20th century. Unbelievable. This guy.
I'm amazed you know this. I don't care that you don't know his name, just the fact that you're even thinking like you do of a power lifter.
What's amazing about it, though, Rob Monaco, of course, was also in the wedge. He was in the wedge, ladies
you mean
and gentlemen,
Paul's
in 1985.
Wedge? In the
no,
Community
no,
Studio?
No, he was in our wedge.
Oh, I see.
As a matter of fact, and I was blocking somebody in front of our wedge, and suddenly I heard this. Right? Only once, of course, but that's what I heard. It was this popping, and tendons that pop on a football field, ladies and gentlemen, you cannot even believe the fact that you can hear it. You can hear the tendons popping.
Good morning.
On a football field. You've got to be kidding me. Of everything that I sit around and ponder from time to time, ladies and gentlemen.
Which
the
is scary
thing
when
that
you do.
Still the thing that still is tormenting to me is the sound of tendons popping on a football field. And it's unmistakable for the most part. And Rob Monaco blew all four tendons that held his quad down to his bone, if you know what I mean. And that thing rolled up like a blind shade around his hip. That was probably the most gruesome thing that I heard. I just don't know if I've seen anything as bad as even what happened to Trevor Siemian last night. I mean, I obviously we have with Joe Theismann, of course, but on the football field, I don't think I've ever seen anything bad. I've seen and heard, of course, Rob Monaco and what happened to Rob Monaco, But that is so different, right? Four tendons exploding, then all of a sudden a joint pointing the wrong way. That was...
The worst for me was, do you remember the kid's name, Kevin Ware? That was the Louisville basketball player in the Final Four.
Man, no.
Kevin Ware was the grossest. I don't mean to make anybody think of images, you know, going into sports,
right.
This early in the morning. Nothing to – we've all seen millions of injuries. There's nothing that will ever be worse than the Kevin Ware one to me.
Right. Enjoy your tea.
Yeah, thank you.
Is that what you're having?
Yeah.
Tea and crumpets?
Yeah. Good morning. Hopefully everybody's doing okay.
Where's the coffee?
It's time for your Arizona Sports Starting Five.
Lewis Cooper.
You can't go to work without knowing these five huge stories.
That's what I was saying to Lewis Cooper.
Here's Doug Franz and Ron Wolfley.
Vince, how's your life? We haven't seen you in a while. Hope everything's going all right.
Number five
this morning, the Jalen Ramsey trade request. One of my favorite guys on television, Lewis Riddick. Who's the perfect team for Jalen Ramsey?
That would be the San Francisco 49ers, to be honest with you. Look, they've taken care of the first two levels of their defense. They have pass rushers galore now that can really make life miserable for opposing quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's a Bosa blaze.
I didn't think you'd go there.
I know. I'm just saying, Lewis.
The thing I can't get over is we all agree the Cardinals could use help at corner, but I'll never forget what I thought going into that draft. The second most talented player in that draft to me, Robert Kubica.
Yes.
The number one, Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
Do you really want both of those guys considering the other one didn't work out so well?
I'd say hit number four.
Number four.
Number four is Cliff Kingsbury, in your opinion. When you go four wide.
I like our four wide outs that we can put on the field. I like matchups we can try to get from that and spread in the field. And as a young quarterback, him being able to see things clearly pre-snap and going from there.
Does he say that because that's what the air raid is and that's why he likes it? Or is he honestly saying our 11 best players is when we have our four best wide receivers on the field?
You know how everybody is so optimistic about Kyler Murray? Well, after what I heard yesterday in regard to Cliff Kingsbury, I'm just as optimistic about Coach Kingsbury.
Number three!
That's because it's all about play calling and you're starting to understand.
Not at all.
Number three, this is kind of funny. If you didn't hear it, a reporter asked Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator of the Jets, about the dynamic play of OBJ, a dynamic wide receiver. And he says, that's your opinion. Actually challenging the media members, saying, hey, you've subjected your opinion into the question. You say he's a dynamic receiver. Fair or not, a media member then went to Baker Mayfield.
Of course.
In his own filtered version of what Greg Williams said.
This week, New York's defensive coordinator suggested that Odell is not a dynamic playmaker. Do you feel like he showed otherwise tonight?
He said that? Jeez, that's next question. Not a dynamic football player.
The foul pal on the sideline on the one hand catch.
Pretty dynamic.
That was Sal Palin.
That is so well done by Baker Mayfield. Are you kidding me?
He said, next question, ESPN Sal Palin Antonio asked, how would you describe the one-handed catch down the sideline? And Baker said, pretty dynamic.
I like it, Baker. I like it a lot.
Number two,
Cliff accountability. Close to, you know, alliteration.
We got to do a better job as a staff and myself of putting them in a situation to be successful when we get down there. And you can't waste plays. In this league, you can't get to third and long at the 10-yard line. It's a tough out.
It sounds like somebody's been talking to Cliff Kingsbury. Or, you know what, he's just saying what everyone wants to hear, right? And not going to change his ways at all. We're going to have a front row seat to that.
Number one.
And the number one thing you need to know about this morning, we can beat the Marlins.
We built some innings. I know that we did a lot right and, you know, got out to a 3-0 lead and then made some mistakes on the mound. Out of the bullpen coming in, a couple key situations, we made some mistakes and they got back on us and jumped ahead.
You know what? You're right, though, Torrey. But when you say bullpen, there's one aspect of this season zero people are talking about, and it's time. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
punch you in the face Tuesday. We say good morning, Masonians. Gather on the transistor and press the ear. Ron Wolfley, Doug Franz, the Doug and Wolf Show. Savages in the morning! Man, it feels good, does it not? Broadcasting all across the basin so you don't have to this morning, my brothers. What are we talking about right now? That is the question that I ask rhetorically. Yeah!
There are a ton of negatives this year with the Arizona Diamondbacks, but there are also a ton of positives this year for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
I see.
With the year that they had that was so frustrating for most of the season, it's easy to forget what did you feel like in March. And, you know, when we were sitting there in March, we thought, yeah, they'd be right about here. We just didn't think the rest of the National League would bring them into the wild card race for so much of the year, and that's what made it frustrating. But out of the 900 things that have happened, there's one huge positive that no one is talking about. There is no way this organization knew what they had in Ginkle. And Ginkle Ginkle got his first save yesterday. We have so much to talk about D-backs wise, but before I moved on from anything else, I just wanted to say it is not normal for a team to call up a closer. And I want Archie Bradley to be the closer and be done with it.
Yo.
But we all know if Archie's pitching at his best, for him to be, as you labeled a long time ago, the silver bullet.
Yes.
And to be a guy that says, oh, your best hitter's coming up in the seventh inning, or your 2, 3, 4 hitters are coming up in the eighth inning, guess who we're doing? Guess what we're doing? Here comes Archie Bradley. But you can only do it if you have a guy that locks down the ninth.
Yeah.
And I'm not ready to say second-year player Ginkle can handle you're the closer all offseason, all spring training, and be lights out in April of 2020.
Yeah.
But I just want to take a second and say this isn't normal for a guy to get called up from AAA and to be the cat that you count on every time you need somebody. And Ginkle has been so good.
What is it about this guy that I absolutely love, ladies and gentlemen? Kevin Ginkle. First of all, just say his name together. Kevin Ginkle. It sounds nefarious, doesn't it? Like it was some kid you knew back in ninth grade, Kevin Ginkle, right? I mean, it's right out of a novel for the most part. Finkel. What was Finkel?
Ray Finkel is Ray the made-up kicker in Pet Detective.
Exactly right. Why do you think they went with Finkel? Finkel. Why do you think they went with that, ladies and gentlemen? Well, because it's
Ginkle. Because it rhymes with Tinkle.
Because it rhymes with Ginkle.
Oh, I see.
Or Tinkle, or whatever you want, right? Kevin Ginkle. First of all, he's got the name. You know, there's just Kevin Ginkle. Give him the ball, and it's over. He's going to squat down, he's going to rock, and he's going to throw.
I don't know how you pick up the – it's if you're a baseball fan, but maybe you don't talk cool baseball terms, this isn't like that, you know, outrageous of a term, but release point. And it is so hard to pick up his release point in that motion.
Right. What is he doing inside that glove? That is the question we're all asking. What is he doing inside that glove with that squat? You could feel it. You could feel it in your thighs when you watch him pitch, right? It's like, dude, man, there's got to be a burn there. There's got to be some type of burn you got going on right now. And then there's the rock back and the throw. It's just a weird delivery of the baseball.
Think about in every sport where you are calm and then there's an explosion of action, whether it be pitching, whether it be hitting, whether it be playing golf, whether it be a middle linebacker reading the play and then going forward. It's always the argument, how low do you want your knees? How much bend? How low do you go? How do you stay upright? Hitters struggle with this all the time. Should I crouch more? Joey Votto is now standing up more.
Votto.
You know, every player is in that constant battle of doing. Do I squat more? Do I stand up more? Ginkle's the only one that does both and doesn't lose his abilities on either one.
It's got to be so disconcerting to a hitter. It really does to look at Kevin Ginkle. Kevin Ginkle, my friends, out there actually pitching and pick up the ball. Where are you picking up the ball with that rock back?
Yeah.
What's the little rock back thing you got going right there?
And if he was
right
short, it wouldn't matter. But with him being a taller dude, one minute he's average height,
right.
And then boom, when he releases the ball, he's now towering over you.
It's got to be disconcerting. You know what the most disconcerting thing is on the football field, Basinonians? Somebody that's not looking at you. Somebody that basically is just ignoring you. When you know you could do some serious damage to them. It's very disconcerting. Somebody, now today, of course, in today's NFL.
There's a blindside block.
You can't hit anybody who isn't looking at you.
Blindside block.
This is once
That's
again.
That's a personal foul.
I don't want to bring myself down. I don't want to do this.
Why would you hit someone that's not looking?
Basin Onings, I don't want to bring myself down right now at what, 6:21 in the morning. But I'm telling you, can't wait. I can't hit you unless you're looking at me. Oh my goodness. Okay, but having said that,
you no longer say head on a swivel.
The most disconcerting thing is honestly somebody that isn't looking at you when you know you could do damage to them. Seriously, it is. And yet the whole time, they're not looking at you for a reason, most of the time, because they're really going to drop the bomb on you at the last moment. That's something that I did for years, over and over and over again. I wasn't going to look at you. I would not acknowledge you, Doug Franz. I would not acknowledge you in the, you know what? I'm not even looking at you, Douglas.
I was going to say, I didn't even know you knew what my
name
was.
And you know what? Honestly, I would just, boom, I would drop the bomb and explode on the dude that I wasn't looking at. It was very disconcerting.
Now, why did you bring
Kevin
this up?
Kevin Ginkle is the exact same way. It's got to be disconcerting. Just where is that really? Where's the ball? It's got to be disconcerting to a hitter.
And then he's got a fastball.
I think the numbers back that up.
Something happened also before the game that you need to know about. You know, there's managerial tradition and all coaching tradition is everybody's a major leaguer. Everybody's an NFL football player. They've got pros over there too. That's always the line.
Yeah.
Well, in truth, they're the Marlins. Okay. Right now, the state of Miami sports, they actually dream of being as good as us, okay? People in Miami who actually know they have sports teams are wondering, why can't we have Phoenix sports teams? They're that bad right now.
No.
Well, having said that, Torrey was asked about the missed opportunity in Miami the last time they went, losing 3 out of 4 to a bad team. And I thought you could – this is one of those moments where you could tell – the brain of a guy who knows what he is supposed to say took over half a second late because he went into missed opportunity in Miami and then quickly goes, well, there's other ones.
Yeah, there's a lot of target games and series that I can go back to. Maybe that one stands out that we overlooked them a little bit. I know that they weren't necessarily playing great baseball at that time, and I think we were playing decent enough baseball to go in there and do what we're supposed to do and win the majority of the baseball games. But I don't know. I feel like when I go home at night, I think about all those things as well. And I have that one in my mind. I have probably 10 or 15 other games in mind as well.
You know, for me,
that's the series.
That's the series. That for you, I know that is the series right there that doomed them. Right?
You're talking about a 100-game loser, and you lose 3 out of 4.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not affronting the athletic process for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm just acknowledging the math. What is the math on this, Douglas? You haven't done it. Like, they'd have to win everything, and everyone would have to lose. Is that the
math? Not quite that bad, but yes. If they win every single game, you still need the Cubs to go below 500.
Can I just say that this season has totally exceeded every expectation that I had for the Diamondbacks? They were much better than what I thought they would be. And again, I'm not trying to affront the athletic process, ladies and gentlemen. It just seems impossible and frankly ridiculous to talk about them coming back and securing another wild card spot. It just seems ridiculous. I didn't understand earlier in the year. Going into the year in spring training, I was looking at it and thinking, how in the world do you lose Paul Goldschmidt? How do you lose Patrick Corbin, AJ Pollock? How do you lose these guys? And then all of a sudden you trade Zach Greinke at the trade deadline.
And lost Steven Souza in a preseason.
Steven Souza Jr. How in the world do you lose these guys? David Peralta. How does that happen? And yet you're still competitive for the most part, right? And that has been a joy to watch them exceed that expectation. It really has.
I tell you, though, it would be so easy for me if great starting pitching would have dominated them and then they dominated bad starting pitching.
Right.
And they would have ended up probably with the exact same record.
That's the one caveat.
And I would feel fine about it. I was like, you know, I thought they were a 500 team. They end up as a 500 team. It's 30-some-odd games this year where a reliever that's so bad he got cut after the game,
right,
or a starting pitcher that the rest of the league runs to the bat rack to face, and that guy dominates the diamondback. That's what makes me think this was such a missed season. But fully, I admit, if you reverse it to what you would feel is normal, where the Strasburgs of the world,
yes,
are getting near no-hitters,
yes,
and you're ripping the Melvilles of the world, that barbecue salesman, then I would be like, well, that's what I thought.
The best thing that came out of this year, I think, for the Diamondbacks, right? Number one, Mike Hazen is extended. Number two, the farm system is rebuilt. Think about that. I am more bullish on where the Diamondbacks are right now, more encouraged where they are right now than I've been in 3 years.
Coming up next, opinionated statement by me. The number one question about Cliff Kingsbury as a hire for the Arizona Cardinals has been answered in 2 weeks. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Wolf loves to testify to this. And I admit, it is totally true, although I wish it was not. And that is, when you first get to know me, there's only about a 10% chance you'll like me.
Yeah, right. And
I admit it.
10%, I think you're a little high.
Thank you. And the reason why on that is very, very simple. So many people, when you meet someone, asks your opinion on something. It happens all the time. You just, you know, oh, what do you think about such and such? And that is the worst thing you can do. I am not someone that runs around yelling my opinion about everything.
Right.
But don't ask me, because if you ask, you're going to get the opinion.
Oh.
Well, and therefore, so, you know, I told, listen, here's a great story to make you sure you everyone understands. I told my girlfriend at the time, her name was Jennifer, weird to say about your wife being your girlfriend. I told her early on, do not ask me, do I look fat in that dress? Because if the answer is yes, guess what you're going to get? Yeah, you look bad.
All right, that's enough.
Don't ask. Just don't ask.
Yes.
If you want my opinion, you're always going to get the honest truth every single time. And if it offends you, so what? You shouldn't have asked. I don't care. Like, I'm not mad about it, but you're going to get it.
Doug, you got to turn it off at times. You can't be the opinionated sports talk radio host 24/7 every day of the year.
I do not have the filter. It's just here. You ask the opinion, here it is. That's bad, yeah, whatever it might be. I say this because this is about Cliff Kingsbury. And I am getting more and more confident in Cliff Kingsbury, and I hate to say this, with just about every loss, with every tie. Much more confident than I was when he first started. And the reason why is simple. We could talk about the offense, blah, blah, blah. The number one question about Cliff Kingsbury to me is, could he, coming from college, lead professional men? That's the number one question I had.
It's a good question.
And when I hear his level of accountability in the things that he is saying, to me it's a really, really simple question is, are you a fraud? Because if you're not a fraud, this is going to work. If we find out later he's just blabbing to the media to get him off his back and he's not going to change anything, or he's really not learning anything and he thinks, I'm smarter than all of you, just shut up and watch my offense and I'm going to be great. Well, if you don't change and you don't learn, you're not going to be that great. But yet when you listen to the things this guy says about what's going on the team, you have to believe what he can do. And the things he has said about what he needs to do. Here's one of the questions yesterday. Are the red zone issues more about play calling or execution?
Yeah, I think it's both, but I think I have to, I mean, I'm going to get adjusted to the NFL game the entire season as well. I mean, college rookie quarterback is my first time calling plays in the league. So I have to wrap my mind around that and finding matchups and finding concepts that work and we can be efficient at. And I just obviously haven't done a great job of that so far.
Who says that as
this
an
is
NFL
why,
head
this
coach?
Is why I think he's actually telling the truth, ladies and gentlemen, because it makes so much sense, first of all. This is why I think he's actually telling the truth. And the reason why I think everything else that you're going to play is really, really important to listen to. Because I think he's learning. He's not afraid to admit that,
yes,
he's learning.
The man who knows everything learns nothing. And I tell the kids that all the time because we got a few know-it-alls in our family who are experts seemingly on every single topic, and they've got an all-knowing definitive opinion all the time on anything and everything. Well, that guy learns nothing. And Cliff Kingsbury is smart enough to know the smartest people in the world realize we only know a fraction of what there is to know out there, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the high IQ people in the world, and Kingsbury is one of those. But at the same time, I still firmly believe, just after the Lions game as well, that he's doing what a good head coach does, and he's taking the blame. He's the lightning rod. There was David Johnson at his locker, guys, in Baltimore. We're standing there, and David Johnson cited a number of errors that he made, more mental errors in blitz pickup, execution of particular routes on particular plays. So it's far from only Cliff Kingsbury when the offense has bogged down or has failed to execute.
But and here's I love right that here. From Cliff,
as you listen to Doug Lees continue to play these cuts, Basin Onions, and I love Bruce Arians. Anybody that has listened to this show, you know B.A. is revered in the Wolfley home. He is. My older brother Craig, when we talk about B.A., it is with reverence, all right, for the most part. This guy is revered in his football knowledge and his old school approach. But as Doug Lees continues to play these cuts, understand B.A. was old school when it came to this. Now, he was progressive, hyper-progressive when it came to a lot of different things. How you coach and being the alpha male and never being wrong for the most part, that was not one of them. That was as old school as it got for B.A., right? Think of the accountability you're listening to right now when you hear Cliff Kingsbury right now, and I think he's being 100% sincere.
And even though we know it's true that he's a rookie head coach who has a lot to learn, for that guy to admit, it's the first time I'm calling plays in the pros,
he's
and
right.
I've got to learn. I don't even hear first-year offensive coordinators in the NFL say that, let alone head coaches. And then to go so far as to admit this, and I got a Dave Stewart story to tell you, which back before he became a general manager of the Diamondbacks, his name was Gold. And unfortunately, things didn't go well. But listen to this from Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah, I just, you know, speed of the game, different things that are going on out there. You get away with in college, you can in the NFL. And I have to do a good job of, you know, not wasting plays when you're in the red zone or score zone. You got to make every play count and have a purpose for every play and can't just throw it up to somebody.
I first of all, just to hear him say that I can't waste plays, I've got to do a better job. But the waste plays, I remember Dave Stewart saying, arguing one time with me at a huge event for the Negro League Museum in Kansas City. We were sitting at the same table, and we were talking just pitching philosophies. And he went off about the 0-2 pitch, saying it is the dumbest philosophy there is to waste pitches hoping to get the guy to chase. Now, some people would disagree with that, but his philosophy was all you're doing is adding to your pitch count. All you're doing is letting that good hitter see more of your stuff. Get the guy out or pitch to contact, but do not waste pitches. I love what Kingsbury's saying. I totally see a guy with his ingenuity in college. I can waste a play to make you think we're going to do this so I can do this later. And now he's learning, just get the ball in the end zone. That's it. Just get it in. And for him to admit these things, if he's being sincere, you have to believe this is going to resonate.
When he says don't waste plays, I think of second and goal at the one against the Lions.
Ooh.
And rolling Kyler out for
maybe
a loss or two.
Third and one as well.
Yeah. And when I hear throw it up at somebody, like you said, you just can't throw it up at somebody. It's like we talked about yesterday, some of the Fitz fades that really had no chance from the get-go. And so that's what, you know, that's him learning on the job. It's not just the quarterback. It's the rookie head coach.
What's so amazing about it, Basin Onions, to me, just like Kyler Murray, watching Kyler Murray go about his business in two games where the Cardinals did not win the game, and yet you're filled with encouragement. Listening to Cliff Kingsbury almost had the same impact on me. Filled with encouragement, knowing what a bright guy he is, knowing how good he is and talented he is in terms of offensive football.
Now implement these lessons.
Now all of a sudden I think, you know what, honestly, I am more encouraged that he's going to develop and turn into the coach we all hope he
is. Totally.
Think about it. He's learning on the job. He's admitting to errors made. You have a rookie quarterback in his second start. You're playing a Baltimore team that's about as dynamic as anyone. You realize the only regular season loss for Lamar Jackson was against Kansas City last year by 3 at the very end. So you're in Baltimore. John Harbaugh's record in September as a head coach in Baltimore is 17-2. 2, and they were down 20-17 in the fourth quarter. You consider all these factors, all these shortcomings right now, and the fact they are learning on the job, and they were right there, a one-score game for most of the fourth quarter. What does that tell us?
One possession game.
It's hard to believe.
What is the ceiling?
Yeah, I'm with you. Have you subscribed to the Doug and Wolf Podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android. You'll never miss any of the show. It's the Doug and Wolf Podcast brought to you this week by Kinetico. If you want to go see the Cardinals and Panthers, Ticket Window Tuesday happens in about 30 minutes, so make sure you're listening at 7:15. Coming up next, if one head case for the Arizona Cardinals didn't work in that draft, do you want the other one? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
No.
There are so many storylines from the 2014 draft. It's almost impossible to get your head around. Cleveland management saying the top two quarterbacks at the top of the draft weren't worth staying there. Jared Goff and Carson Wentz were the two quarterbacks taken at the top of that draft.
Oh.
So you have that decision. You have that was the draft, if you remember, the Laramie Tunsil incident.
Yes.
When all of a sudden, right in the middle of the first round, the Twitter goes crazy with the video of Laramie Tunsil early in his days at Ole Miss with the gas mask. You have that. You have Paxton Lynch getting drafted by the Broncos when the Cowboys were trying to trade up and get him. And with the 29th pick, the Cardinals had it because the Patriots had lost it. The Patriots were supposed to draft at 29, but Deflategate, they lost that pick. And then the Cardinals drafted Robert Kimdichie. And I remember when they drafted Robert Kimdichie saying, I hate the pick now, but at the time I said I loved it because I knew all of the problems of Robert Kimdichie, but I thought, you know what? At pick 29 for that talent, it's worth it.
I was the guy saying, basically, there's no way in the world. There is no way in the world. I thought he was the most talented player in the draft. I kid you not. When you look at his speed-to-power ratio, when you look at his numbers, when you look at his athleticism, his ability, his body type, unbelievable stuff. It was like, there was no way. I said it at the time. There was no way I'm drafting this guy in the top 15. No way in the world. And I never thought he'd be there. I thought he was going to go number 3, number 4, somewhere in there. I thought he'd never be there at 29 when the Cardinals were going to pick. And all of a sudden, he was there. And although I had ruled him out and said I would never take him in the top 15, suddenly he was there, and I said it on draft day. I said, if I'm Steve Keim, I'm up walking around that table right now because I know they've already made up their mind as to whether or not they're going to draft a guy like that or not. But even if I did, there's no way in the world when it actually came down to it that I wasn't going to consider that.
Well, the reason why I brought it up, because obviously I differ with you only a little bit, is I thought he was the second best player in that draft, just talent-wise. And my number one was Jalen Ramsey.
Yep.
And now
he was my number two.
When you have a cornerback need as the Arizona Cardinals, what is Steve Keim thinking when he hears?
After the game last night, Jalen Ramsey's agent, David Mulgeeta, requested a trade from the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jaguars have been in contact with other teams about trading him, but they said that at this time, there are no current plans to deal Jalen Ramsey.
There are no connections whatsoever between Kimdichie and Ramsey other than our opinions that they're the two most talented players in that draft. But does Robert Kimdichie affect Steve Keim's desire at all for Jalen Ramsey? The Jags are saying first round and. We'd like to get a first round pick.
Right.
What they're saying now, and granted, this is what you say at the beginning, the bar they're setting is first round plus something else.
Yeah, okay. Define something else.
Are you in? Right?
What about this, ladies and gentlemen? This might be a better way to go. What about the straight-up trade of Jalen Ramsey, of course, for Patrick Peterson? That also has been a topic of conversation when you stop and think about it. Not only because they have a year and a half left on their contract, both of them do, right, signed through 2020, but also just because of, oh, there's one corner, and we know Pat P. has had a little bit of a dust-up. He's had some problems here, the six-game suspension not being the least of those problems, right? And then, of course, Jalen Ramsey and the disgruntled Jalen Ramsey, the malcontent Jalen Ramsey. Maybe we ought to just flop, right? I mean, That's what everyone's looking at. It's just so easy, right? I don't think it's quite that easy to begin with.
It's interesting you bring that up, because if I'm the Jags, I am looking as hard as I would do that. I don't know if I do it if I'm the Cardinals, because aren't you trying to get a corner opposite Patrick Peterson? But I got to tell you, if I'm Jags, I jump on that immediately, because number one, I like the idea of reuniting Calais and Patrick to have them on the same defensive side of the ball from a leadership standpoint, even though we can debate Patrick's
nice
leadership. And I think there's something – okay, I'm going to say – man, I did not want to come out with this opinion.
Do not say this.
I like Gardner Minshew.
Oh.
And I'd like to have him going up against Patrick every day.
You just like Mike Leach, and that's the reason why you love Minshew.
I do like Mike Leach. But I'd like to have that for Gardner Minshew, just to have that guy to go up against in practice. So there's story number one you need to know about. Story number two is last night's game in which the New York Jets lose to the Cleveland Browns. Freddie Kitchens, first win as an NFL head coach. But after the game, the story was Baker handling the pressure. Notice I said after the game.
This week, New York's defensive coordinator suggested that Odell is not a dynamic playmaker. Do you feel like he showed otherwise tonight?
He said that? Jeez. That's next question. Not a dynamic football player.
The okay. Throw down the sideline on the one-handed catch.
Mm-hmm.
How was it?
Pretty dynamic.
Well, I think you could hear it, so awesome. But in case you couldn't, it's Greg Williams, the DC of the Jets, former interim head coach of the Browns, who was asked about facing a receiver as dynamic as OBJ, and Greg, and he interrupted the question and said, that's your opinion. So that's the clarification, and then that's the media relaying that answer, questioning whether or not OBJ's dynamic. That's when Baker Mayfield is asked to describe what he thinks. He goes, wait, next question. But then Sal Palatonio says, how would you describe that specific catch? Pretty dynamic.
Yeah, that was really, really good right there. But first of all, my first thought on this is, don't tell me you didn't hear this, Baker. Don't tell me you didn't hear that, right? And we all know that you heard Greg Williams, actually. He just,
that's kind of a failure of the media relations guy.
To me right now, I'm just saying that I think Baker was trying to magnify the error by Greg Williams when he said, he said that? Right? I think this is just me. I could be dead wrong on this, Basin audience. But he had to hear Greg Williams. That had to be news in the Cleveland Browns locker room that Greg Williams didn't think that Odell Beckham Jr. was a dynamic player. And that's why I think he said, he said that? Right? And it was so innocuous the way he said, give me a break. You're just trying to highlight the fact that he said that. And by the way, did you just see the game that this guy played, OBJ? That was my number one thought right there. And number two was, well played, Baker Mayfield.
Absolutely.
Well played. Not coming across, attacking him, not trying to act like a jerk, not just literally, okay, if maybe you did that, yeah, it was a little nefarious, pretending like you didn't hear it. He said that? Really? He said, right? But to me, it was done in a classy kind of way.
Yeah, and Baker sometimes has struggled with that. Now, Odell's turn.
What was your feelings about what Greg Williams said the other day about, he basically said he didn't think you were one of the league's most dynamic players?
Who? Who's it? Oh. Everybody has the right to their own opinion. He's a phenomenal coach. He's got a great defense, but I'm done talking about it.
Whoa! Standing ovation right now. Standing ovation for OBJ. Wow. That is some growth right there.
And it really is.
It is.
If he would have said the same thing as professional to the kicking net, we'd be in a lot better place.
The same thing as Baker Mayfield. Who? Okay, that was it all. Okay, we all know. We all know you heard the question and you know exactly.
And now Greg Norman had actually said the same thing on that one too.
What?
He had said who about
who? Okay, yes.
He's being funny.
But he's being funny right there, obviously, right? But the fact that he said what he said right there, he's a great coach, and you know, way to go, OBJ. Just do the right thing. Don't worry about it. Bury the axe, bury the hatchet, so to speak.
20 minutes away from your chance to see Carolina and Cardinals coming up this Sunday at State Farm Stadium. Be listening for Ticket Window Tuesday, brought to you by Arizona Central Credit Union in the 715 beautiful part of the program. Coming up next, the 2018 Arizona Cardinals were bad. The 2019 Arizona Cardinals haven't won a game. So why are we so much more optimistic with Kyler Murray? Are we soft? Or are we right? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.